Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 609. It's the 12th of October, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Tony the Manini, the CEO of Asia Met Resources, that's ARS ticker, talks about today's RNS, which is a BKM feasibility study advancing to plan with mining and geotechnical studies underway. It's going to be a mine, everyone. Also on the podcast, Doc Holliday, small cap commentator, talks about Physiomics. I think I've got that right. Ticker is PYC. He sees punt potential there. Listen, everything you hear in this podcast are investment ideas. Do your own research. Don't base any investment strictly or solely on the stuff you hear here. Please do your own research, okay? They're just ideas we put out there. Some work, some don't. It's up to you to decide by doing research. Also on the podcast, successful private investor Smudge Dan talks about the following stocks: Zamano, Tengri, Mercom Capital, React Energy, Management Resource Solutions, Mila Resources, and Mayan Energy. That's MYN. And Dan also mentions the presentation, the company's presentation, that he says is worth looking at to do your research. And I've put a link to that presentation at voxmarkets.co.uk. blog, and just click on the blog post there, today's blog post, and you can click the link there, or just go Mayan Energy and go to the sort of investor section there, or I think it's news section, but just go to the blog, it's easier. I also got the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours, and number one, and usual suspects, but number one, eh? And also have the most liked RNS on the Vox Markets website this morning. And it's a world record beater for the amount of likes it got. So I'll read that out in a bit. Oh, and by the way, I'm after a stock that people should put on their watch list. This is suggested by you, by listening to the podcast. If you know of a company that you think people should add to their watch list, then please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, click the link there down at the bottom of the blog page, and fill out the form, and I will feature it on a future podcast.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO for Asia Met Resources, that's ARS ticker, it's Tony Manini. Tony, thank you for coming back on.
Oh, great to be here, Justin. Good to talk.
Yes, and nice little RNS out today. I've got to say, it's probably the most popular RNS we've ever had on the Vox Markets website. It's got loads of likes. It's beaten the previous top liked RNS quite easily. And it's the BKM feasibility study advancing to plan. And so before we get into that, Tony, for anyone out there, I know you're one of the most followed companies on Vox Markets website, but if there's anyone out there who doesn't know about Asia Met, can you give us a summary as to what you're all about, please?
Yeah, sure, Justin. So Asia Met's a copper-focused development company working in Indonesia. We have two projects that we're currently working on there. The BKM copper project, which is in Kalimantan, being advanced through feasibility study as we speak. We also have a very large copper porphyry project called Butong. Again, that project has defined JORC and N43-101 compliant resources on it. And that, again, is a large project which is ready to take through into feasibility stage. So we've got two projects there, which are copper projects. One's a near-term development looking at 25,000 tonnes per annum of copper cathode. The second larger project is a growth project for the company in copper. It has the potential to be a much larger project, up to potentially 100,000 tonnes per annum. So, you know, two very substantial projects, well advanced, and, you know, we've got a team of people together that have done all this before, built a number of mines, taken a number of projects through the studies phase, financed and into production. So, you know, Asia Met's a very well-positioned company. Asia Pacific, key markets for the materials that we'll be producing. Very experienced in the region, and, you know, very attractive proposition in terms of value where we are currently in the market.
Yeah, well, when I saw this RNS today, I thought, this is getting real now, you know? Because I saw you guys, you've engaged with the Australian Mine Design and Development Limited, and I just checked out their website, and their list of clients is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, you know, AMDAT is a very well-known company in the mining engineering space. John Wyche and AMDAT have done a lot of work for us over the years. So, Justin, you've heard me talk about the CEPON development, which I was involved in Laos back in the late 90s, early 2000s. John actually and AMDAT did a lot of the mine design work on that project and have subsequently been involved in most of the projects that we've developed over the past few years, so over the past probably 10 to 15 years. So very experienced group. I think most importantly, Justin, you know, it's AMDAT is very experienced in the Southeast Asian region where, you know, there are a particular set of circumstances where you've essentially got relatively high rainfall environments. And these guys, you know, are very much specialists in designing mines specifically for those types of environments. So Laos, Indonesia, you know, they've got a lot of experience. They've actually done quite a lot of mine design work in Indonesia over the past few years, including, you know, Finders Resources Wetar project, which is quite similar to BKM that's currently in production. So they were involved in that work and also involved in the Matabi Gold project, which is being operated in North Sumatra very successfully at the moment. So very experienced group.
Yeah, and I think what some people don't understand is that you get exploration companies and sometimes they have no intention of going to actual production. They prove up the sort of resource there, get some couple of studies out there and then move it on to someone else. But like you said, from the start, you've always said this is going to be, you know, a cotton producing company and we want to build this company up and hopefully, you know, like you've done with previous companies, follow that kind of model. And so, it's when you see you've engaged with these, and PT Ground Risk Management, when you see you've engaged with these guys, it brings the actual production element a lot closer, doesn't it? So what's next now, Tony, after this?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's exactly right, Justin. I mean, one of the key points in what you just said is that, you know, as you know, I've said all along, this is nothing new to us. We have done all this before. And I think you can see that we're actually getting on with the work. We're not just talking about it. We're actually getting on doing it. We're engaging the best people for specific tasks. We know who they are. We've done it before. We've got them involved and they're very happy to come and work for us and be involved because they know that we're serious about actually building this project. So, you know, got all those key people in place. And you know, as you can see, you know, a couple of releases ago, we sort of outlined a few key consultants who were doing various parts of work. We've now got the mining guys and the mine geotech guys. But, you know, very importantly, we've also got PT Lorax on the job in terms of the environmental side. So, you know, the environmental permitting is a very important part of any mine development project. So, you know, we've brought those guys in at an appropriate stage in the development. They're doing all the background work to get the environmental studies done and get the AMDOL, what's called the AMDOL, which is essentially your environmental impact assessment, which you have to provide to the government to get the project permitted and into construction. So all of those different, you know, components are underway. So what's next was the question. So you know, we are we're still, as you can see from what we've outlined here today, we've got still a lot of work to do on the feasibility study, and so all of those different work streams will be going on, you know, right through for the next few months. At the same time, you know, the intention, Justin, is to, once we get the bulk of the drilling out of the way for the feasibility work, we'll be looking to put a rig or two onto testing some of these sexy high priority targets that we've got nearby BKM, and also sort of in the broader group, in the broader KSK tenement. We are currently working on getting a forestry permit for Baroi. When we have that forestry permit, that'll pave the way and allow us to get on to putting some holes into that target, where we've already got some very, very high grades, which, you know, people have seen in our past releases and in our presentation, which is on the website. But, you know, 3% copper and high grade zinc and high silver and, you know, very, very little work done to date. So, you know, it's quite an attractive target. There are, we've got the BK South, we've got the BK West, and we've got the BKZ polymetallic very close to the BKM project. And then also we've got Bootong. So, you know, Bootong essentially needs additional work in terms of drilling and studies work to advance it along the path. As I've said before, I've been working away very hard in the background in terms of how we're going to take the whole package forward. I think one of the things, Justin, I'd like to sort of just maybe touch on a bit today is, I guess you know, most people have sort of read and heard a little bit about China's the new Silk Road, if you like, the One Belt, One Road, they call it. I think one of the very important things I'd like to just point out there is that Indonesia is an important part of that One Belt, One Road strategy for China. And government-to-government relations between Indonesia and China are now probably as strong, if not the strongest, that they've ever been. So we're seeing a lot of interest in what we are doing on our projects in Indonesia from a various number of Chinese groups. I've had a couple of visits to China. I have another one planned in a couple of weeks' time. And we have some groups who, you know, are looking to come and visit our sites. So, you know, we're working on, you know, as I said for previously, we would, you know, like to introduce a partner in to help us develop the Big Bootong project. And, you know, we're advancing that along the path. And at the same time, you know, we need to continue to fund the development of BKM. So, you know, we've got interest from a whole range of different groups, and, you know, they are from private corporates to state-owned corporates to companies which are involved, which are interested to be involved in the construction, the procurement and provision of equipment tied to funding. So, there's a whole lot of, I guess, corporate initiatives in terms of driving the project forward beyond the feasibility study through the financing and into the construction phase, which are ongoing at the moment. So a lot of work going on there. So, you know, hopefully we'll have some news on all of that coming through over the next few months. You know, we also obviously have the gold project, which, you know, I've elaborated before, is not a core, considered to be a core project for us, but we have advanced a long way in terms of executing on a deal to extract value from that project. And one of, you know, but one of the things that we need to do is to get the production license in place for the project. So which reminds me that really I should just touch on the permitting side of things. Justin?
I was going to ask, you pretty much covered off the next two questions I was going to have. First of all was, on a corporate level, you know, how are things going? I know you've been travelling around, and so you've covered that, and so you've got several groups coming over to look at the thing, and you've been in China a lot. And yes, that's another thing. When I've looked on social media, a couple of people mentioning about these licences for Butong and July, and it's a conversion, isn't it? It's taken a bit of time. So what is the deal there? What's the state of play with those licenses at the moment?
Yeah, so so just in terms of timing, Butong was always a little bit ahead of July in terms of the timing of the processing of the licenses. We've submitted all the documentation that's required to have those licenses approved. We've been through a number of presentations. We've been through a number of iterations in terms of modifying things and providing additional information. We've now put everything on the table. And as of late last week, we had a meeting with the Director General, who said essentially that everything that we needed to submit has been submitted and being processed. And it's now a matter of time for the government to work through their processes to provide us with the production licenses. I'll just remind people that a mining license is you can see the amount of work going in, technical work and study work that goes into a feasibility study. A mining license is a very, very significant milestone for a company, but also for the government. You know, there's any number of people who do exploration work. There's very few who take projects through and into development. And with the development comes a lot of impacts. And a lot of those are very positive, and some of those can be negative, and it's our job to minimise the negative impacts, of course. So, the government's very particular about the scrutiny of the work that you've done, the documentation that you've provided, and they have their processes, checks and balances to go through all that. We've been through a long and systematic process, and now we just await for the approval. So I'm confident that it's not far away. I'm assured that we don't need to provide anything else. We've provided everything we needed. And there are no issues with what we've provided. We just need now to be a little patient to get it, and I don't think that's any different to any jurisdiction globally. So no concerns from my end. I know it's taken a long time, and I know a fair bit of patience is required. As I did mention to you, Justin, before we came on, that unfortunately, there's been some changes in ministers and directors over the past couple of months, and you know that hasn't helped things in terms of the progress. But I'm assured now that we're all on track, and those things should be forthcoming shortly. As I say, I'm not concerned about it.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right there by saying, you know, any sort of government jurisdiction there, it can take time. Same thing kind of happened over here. I remember the 14th onshore oil and gas licences were awarded in December of last year, and they're in now, starting to come through. So they're basically awarded, but the final formal, you know, rubber stamping of that process has taken 10 months, and that's in the UK. And they say that was down to Brexit and government departments changing, and it just delays time. And it's no specific fault of any one company at all. It's just basically government, that's the way governments work. It's a long, protracted, you know, process. So essentially, you're not concerned. It's just, and we know shareholders have doubt when they have lack of news, especially on AIM. You know, they still have doubt. But as far as you're concerned, it's all in place, and it's just a matter of being patient.
Yeah, no, exactly, Justin. And I hope sort of I've outlined there that everything that's within our control has been completed, and fairly recently completed. So, you know, we just now wait for the approvals to come through, and there's no reason to be concerned. And particularly that's been conveyed to us, you know, as recently as last week. So,
okay, good. Well, Tony, listen, there's only three things left you need to do. I mean, you are one of the most followed companies on the Vox Markets website, but to encourage people to hit that follow button if they're not following you, can you give us 3 points in summary, please, as to why someone should follow Asia Met on Vox Markets, please?
Oh, look, I'm very consistent with this, as you know, Justin, but, you know, Asia Met, you know, is a company which has, I think, some very special features, and they are its people. So, you know, as we've discussed during this interview, we've actually got people that have done it all before. We've got a first-class team of people, both management and consultants, very focused, know what to do, and are just getting on and doing it. So, you know, we've got the team to deliver. We've got the projects, you know, very high quality projects. Because we are a team of people who take things right through, we wouldn't, you know, we just wouldn't waste our time and effort on projects that don't have quality. So we've got projects that, you know, very high quality. They have all the right attributes for mining projects in terms of their cost structure, both capital and operating. And they're doable. You know, they're in a jurisdiction where we have a lot of experience. We've done it before. And, you know, we know we can deliver high quality projects which generate, you know, very good returns for investors over time. So people, projects, and really the last one is, you know, it's a combination of value and timing. We are very much at the low point in the cycle for copper. You have seen copper, you know, it pushes up to 220, it's back to 206, 215. It's just trawling along the bottom at the moment. And, you know, there's not a lot of impetus for copper projects right now. That's pretty much as predicted. And so, you know, we're at a low point in the cycle. All the copper stocks, particularly to, you know, I mean, the major guys right down to the junior guys, and we tend to get beat up more than most, you know, have been sort of comprehensively beaten up in terms of their valuations, which, you know, for serious companies with good assets like our own are, really, you know, quite ridiculously priced, to be frank. So, you know, these things have a tendency to turn quickly. We've seen that recently with coal, particularly with coking coal. In 3 months, it's gone from, you know, in the $70 to $90 range to $200, and I think the benchmark quarterly pricing today was recently at $170. So they can turn quickly. So really, you know, we've got great assets, very undervalued, good people, and, you know, the timing couldn't be right to invest. You know, if you're a longer-term investor with a bit of patience, the time to get in is at the bottom of the cycle. Accumulate a position and hold tight, and, you know, you'll do very well over time. It's what I've done myself all my life.
Excellent, Tony. Thanks very much. I'm just looking at the chart here on the copper, and it seems to have hit a bottom, and it's now trading a little bit above that bottom, which is quite a good technical sign. So, you know, it seems to be confirming to, you know, what we think is going to happen. Thanks very much for coming on, Tony, and listen, and look forward to speaking to you again in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks, Justin. Always good to talk, and appreciate your time. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is small cap commentator Doc Holliday. You all right, Doc?
Hi, Justin. How are you today?
I'm all right, thanks. Yes, fella. Yes. What are you looking at? What's your eyes on? I know you're always constantly researching, looking at stocks, and obviously in the small cap arena. What has taken your eye?
A little biotech company by the name of Physiomics, ticker PYC.
PYC, pretty young. No, it doesn't work. Okay, yeah, I got it up here. So it's showing 1.4 million market cap. Yeah, that is small. So what's the story here?
Basically, there's a legacy relationship between Physiomics and Sarium Holdings. I went onto the PYC website. That relationship is still shown on the website, so I'm assuming it's still in place. PYC signed an agreement with ICR and CRT, who are also partners with Sarium. Back in 2010, 2011, a guy by the name of Dr. Paul Harper was a chairman of a number of biotech companies. and they were sort of all interrelated in some way. The idea is the virtual tumour project that the company have, the technology that PYC has, would enter in information from other biotech companies, and it would be able to project or forecast from the information inputted how well the drug would work or the science would work on its candidate, the patient, should we say. So, you know, it takes a lot of years to get these things in the biotech sector from A to B. It could be a decade or more. It's been a long time for these guys too. But basically, the technology will, you input data for the patient, the candidate, and then it will give you a forecast, or it will give you a projection of how they believe the tumor will react under those conditions with that patient. So it takes all the information in, and you puncture in, and then it spits out a forecast. And that's what that virtual tumor project is. This is in the layman's terms, by the way. You know, I'm obviously not a scientist, but that's pretty much how this was going to work. Now, a lot happened back in 2011. Sarium Holdings announced their CHK1 compound had very strong results. 10 out of 10 was the word used. And quite quickly, the business went up by about 20 times, 30 times the multiple or more. People were making these ludicrous claims that they'd found a cure to cancer or a certain form of cancer. And it pegged these companies on the map. Massive market price, market caps and share prices, and a lot of people had obviously made a lot of money, but there was obviously a great deal of hope that was priced into this. And unfortunately, as we know today, that wasn't a success. They didn't find a cure for cancer. They just managed to identify that one of its candidates worked particularly well, and I think it was on mice. So moving on, I revisited Physiomics, particularly after the recent announcement from Sarium Holdings. Ironically, a month or two back, I was asked, would this be a company that you'd want to put some money into in a fundraiser, etc., etc. I said, no, you know, these things have dragged on for such a long time. I'm not sure whether it's going to get to where it needs to be. And then quickly, Sarium made an announcement on their CHK1 compound, which saw shares soar by about 150%. So I now look at Sarium for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and I can see that the market cap seems quite happy at this 30, 40 million valuation. And I think there's a bit of an argument that perhaps it could be overvalued or at least fully valued at this level. But knowing the history of PYC, that traded roughly at about a quarter to a third of the market cap of Sarium. So at some point, these two are going to come back together. I think with a £1.5 million market cap against the 30, 40 million pound market cap, they're probably going to meet somewhere in the middle. And by that, I mean, you know, the valuation of Physiomics is going to get closer to being a quarter of the valuation of Sarium again. It's just one of these pair trades that has existed for a long time, and it would need people who've been in the market a long time to understand that. I went back through the RNSs, and when I start wrapping this up, because I know I'm starting to twaddle on a bit, I went back through the RNSs of the company. I note that Physiomics' relationship with Sarium is on the company's website. But I also note that in May, the business had signed yet another, I think, a sixth extension to an agreement that it had signed with an industry major. In 4 years, we're still waiting to see what's happening with that, but nonetheless, it's obviously still in place. So this company's got some agreement with a pharmaceutical business, a major. It's got a legacy relationship with ICR, CRT, and Sarium Holdings. They work together with its virtual tumor program. The company later over summer have changed their scope. They're not going to do a biomulti acquisition, which was something that was put in place, I believe, by the previous management team, and instead have gone and raised just over £500,000 with Hybridan. Again, Hybridan are an advisor to Sarium Holdings as well. So again, I think there's some relationship there. It's not by chance that these guys have agreed to raise £500,000, not for new business ventures, not to go and change and do something completely different, because some would argue that this isn't working, and even myself believe that this was dragging on a little bit too long. But instead, Hybridan, the shared advisor with Sarium, have gone and raised over £500,000 with some high net worth investors and institutions who wanted to keep and retain the legacy business, so have now decided that they're going to invest more into that and they're going to focus on it. I think they're very interesting points. I know I've taken about 2 or 3 minutes to explain it, but it isn't easy with biotech companies, particularly when you're of low intellect like myself.
No, I understand that. Do you know what? And it's quite interesting. I'm just reading, you know, a bit about them, and I never ever considered that, because they say there's a high attrition rate for, you know, drug trials, and a lot of them fail pretty much, and their sort of computer system will reduce this failure rate. And they said there even overall 10% improvement in success rates could reduce the cost of one drug's development by as much as $242 million from the current estimate of around $800 million. So you can see that, you know, obviously there's a massive market there, but it's one I want to look into, because they've raised, like, you know, compared to, they've raised like over $500,000, their market cap is $1.4 million. So you know, they've got cash there, and I just look at how much they've sort of lost last year. It's only $147 million, so they've got a bit of cash there for a while. So essentially it's about timing, isn't it? So do you think they've taken a while to do anything, but do you think now something's on the cards, if something's going to happen here, or are you just sitting and waiting? What?
No, I'll be honest with you, these companies have, they're generally really slow coming forward, and they're pretty good at spending cash. So from a very short-term perspective, what you've got to look at is what have they announced? What do we know? Well, I've got the placing out of the way. As I say, the irony of that is I was asked, would I be interested in participating, completely rejected it. And then within 2 weeks, I'm now looking back at it because of Sarium's announcement. But again, this is, so what do we know? The company have raised cash. They've got a sixth extension to an agreement with a major pharmaceutical company. I mean, for them to have been interested for 4 years and keep extending that relationship and keep showing an interest, there's got to be something there. We also know that the acquisition that the previous management team looked to initiate has been rejected, and that Hybridan, a now shared advisor with Sarium Holdings, have gone and raised £550,000, not to do something new and different, but actually to invest in the legacy virtual tumour project and try and pursue and advance on those fronts. And the company are now actually making the noise that they're going to be able to do something. So that happens. Then Sarium released an RNS about their CHK1 compound. We know that the relationship with ICR and CRT and Sarium and its CHK1 kinase compound is one which now gives them access up to $319 million or something like that. We know that PYC have had a legacy relationship with all three partners, not just Sarium, but the ICR and the CRT. And it's all there for people to see. The caveat, the risk is they do absolutely sod all. They go and spend the money, they keep on dragging the knuckles, and nothing happens. The market cap's 1.4 million. It's got a bit of cash. I think there's a short-term view that if you invest and you sit and you wait, you can get in now at just under the placing price. That potentially, if they react to this huge uplift in valuation at Sarium, then you've got a short-term trade opportunity. If they then start to, you know, put some tangible and fundamental sort of framework to that, you know, we've made advances on X, Y, or Z, then you could argue that actually now we've got an investment, because we're in at the bottom. We can see where there's been a natural uplift because of the disconnect between the two valuations of these companies who've acted like pear trawlers in the market for way over 5 or 6 years, to my knowledge. But actually, there's now a fundamental framework of why you will hold the stock. So I think there's an opportunity. I'm not quite sure how far it'll go. And as I say, if they do nothing, absolutely nothing, then, you know, you're going to find that there's going to be a further slow erosion in the share price. So it's a very risky play, but it's one that's got my attention.
Yeah. And like you said there, I mean, it's up a little bit today, so you can still buy at the placing price, which is 0.025. And the opportunity is there, yeah. Exactly. Listen, anyone listening, do your own research. And like I said, you know, these are investment ideas. Not all ideas work out, but it's always nice to have them. Doc, thanks very much for that, fella. It's a complicated story, but I've got my head around it, I think. Thanks, and speak again soon.
Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is successful private investor Smudge Dan. You're right, Dan?
Very well, Justin. Thank you.
Now, we just spoke before we came on here, and we mentioned you've had a lot of good successes. You've come on the podcast and highlight the stocks, and they've done really well. But, of course, you just said to me, you've got to highlight some of your losers as well, because, you know, no one, you know, is, apart from one person I've had on the podcast before, no one believes they get everything right ever, 100% of the time. So let's start off with some of the things that hasn't gone to plan, because I think sometimes, I honestly believe, you know, when you make a loss on a company, you learn more, you know, than actually when you win. And I think one of the best things, as long as you manage your risk okay, I think one of the best things you can do is refine your strategy, isn't it? And know why it went wrong and all this. Do you think that as well?
Yeah. I mean, you can only do what you can to try and mitigate any kind of negative situations. I mean, one that I mentioned on the podcast previously was Zomano. You know, I thought that all stacked up. They you know, they had a decent cash pile. They had an existing business. They were looking to buy a new business as well. So then they announced last month that the existing business, you know, kind of fallen foul of the current regulations and was gonna suffer massively going forward. So that knocked about sort of 30-40% off the share price.
Yeah.
I mean, fortunately with that one, at least they did have a cash pile, so it wasn't a complete wipeout. But it's still, you know, it was a dig in the ribs. Everyone's going to get one of those once in a while, and it you know, absolutely keeps your feet on the ground. And I think if you look back on those situations, you think, you know, would I have done this any differently? And you can look back and say, well, actually, no, you know, this was just a complete bolt from the blue.
Yeah, well, like I said, the only thing you can control, is the amount of risk you expose yourself to, isn't it? And as long as you don't put, like, you know, I've seen, you know, one of the big mistakes of new investors is putting too much into one stock, you know, because if something does go wrong, especially in penny stocks, like you said, you can see a drop of 30-40% overnight, and that's and if all your money's in that, then that's worrying, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, overexposure is an absolute killer, and no matter how good you think the stock is, you've always got to manage your exposure and just not go too much into any one stock. I mean, that's like the main rule in this game, really.
Yeah. Okay. What some other stocks have you mentioned? How are they doing?
Yeah. So on the podcast over the last few months, we've mentioned a few, and that have all, well, a few of them have come good this month. Actually, MCC, Mercom Capital, that went up several 100% in the last month. So that was good. I think I mentioned Tengri Resources, TEN, last month. That had a nice rise as well. A few months ago, St. Petersburg Capital, that went up as well, and then yesterday, one I think I mentioned last month was React Energy.
Yes,
that had that went up and then came back down. But I mean, I took some off the table when it got up to 5p, and I'm just going to keep the rest of it because that had some pretty good news yesterday about some possible funding for one of their biomass plants. So
that's right, and that's also a lesson there in never buy the spike, isn't it? You know, because like I said, it really shot up. And if you'd bought there at 5p, you'd be sitting now at 3.6p. And so that's a bit of a loss, yeah. Isn't it? You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's always another share, and there's always another day, and you know, if something's gone up 100%. I just would never buy anything that's gone up 100% in a day, because it doesn't matter how good the story is.
It's just
not worth it, because the potential downside is will almost always outweigh the potential upside.
Yeah, exactly. All right, what stock are you looking at this week then?
So there's got a couple of new ones. I mean, the other one that I've been building a further position in, and we talk about overexposure here, and I'm probably getting into that realm, is on MRS, Management Resource Solutions, where I've taken even more on that one. I mean, there's been a bit of a seller, so that's probably an understatement, but I just think that the fundamentals are, in my view, the best on AIM. I think there's huge upside there. And I'm really, really confident that that one's going to deliver. They completed the acquisition of Sub-Zero on schedule. So and the results are coming out for the end of November for the existing businesses. And they've already said that they've exceeded expectations. So I think, you know, for something that's about an 8.5 million market cap, you'd do well to find anything more attractive than that on AIM at the moment.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm hoping to get Paul on the podcast maybe next week, I think, from MRS. So
excellent. Yeah, I think that'll be good. I think, you know, it's one of those companies that not a lot of people seem to have heard of. The PR hasn't been fantastic historically. And obviously it's a rapidly growing and fluid business, so there's a lot of moving parts in it, and consequently, you know, I think it'd be good for him to come on and articulate that.
Yeah, and also this is another, we're learning some lessons here, but it's also another lesson in that old adage, isn't it, almost buy the rumour and sell the fact, because for a while that was, you know, building up on the Sub-Zero thing, and they really had a bit of a nice rise for a couple of days. And then all of a sudden, the deal was done, which improves the fundamentals of the company, as we sort of knew, and you knew, and yet it's come off. You think, hey, what's going on?
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, it was a big placing in the context of the market cap previously, you know, the amount of shares placed, it was sort of 26 million plus, and you know, out of 35 that they had prior to that. So there's been a lot of sellers, but I'm confident that we are right near the end of the sellers now, and I think once that's done, we're going to see a pretty big spike up towards the results at the end of November. So that's my main one at the moment. A couple of others that I've been buying recently, one that I took in the placing, which was a new shell called Miller Resources, ticker is MILA. And it's quite a small one. Current market cap's around sort of 1.5 million, total shares in issue is about 23 million. But what interests me about these is their business model. They are, you know, they're a shell at the moment, but they've got some interesting shareholders. One of the guys that's involved in the business is Mark Stevenson, who was involved in Highland Natural Resources, which obviously came onto the market and did very well from there. The four founding shareholders have taken 400,000 shares each at 5p. So there's not a lot of pre-IPO money, cheap IPO money in there. Something I always look at for a lot of these IPOs. You know, is there a lot of cheap IPO money in there that just gets dumped as soon as the IPO comes in? So you know that it ticks a box from that perspective as well. So they've essentially been set up to take advantage of high return mining investments created by the gap in the finance market for late stage exploration assets. The current financing conditions for the resource sector have created good conditions to take control of the assets cheaply. And the company has a pipeline of deals from private equity houses that are too early stage for them to back, that may be in the private equity houses, but they would be prepared to back it at a later stage. And Miller's strategy is to bridge that gap between exploration and feasibility to feed the need of the private equity houses. So I think it's quite an interesting business model. It's a pretty low market cap. It's got a good management team, an advisory committee that's quite experienced. So I just think, you know, it kind of ticks the boxes for me at this stage.
That's potential there. Mila, okay, MILA. Yeah, cool.
MILA, yeah. That's worth having a look at, I think. The other one that I took a position on last week, actually. I spoke to a couple of guys, Richard and Peter, at Momentous Events. And I spoke to them for an hour about Mayan Energy, which I did know a little bit about, but I found out a lot more about last week. So thanks to them for that. So this was the former Northcote Energy.
That's right. Obviously, Randy was there before, wasn't he, at Northcote? He's not still there now, is he?
That's right. No, yeah, Randy's gone, and he's been replaced by a guy called Eddie Gonzalez.
I love it. Do you know what? You've got to have a flashy name to be there, either Randy or Eddie Gonzalez.
Yeah.
It's exactly, like a wrestling tournament.
Tag team. Yeah, he's come in. Eddie's come in. Yeah. But Eddie has, he's got a great CV. There's a fantastic presentation that the company put out in September. So I hopefully you can put up a link for that later on, because I can't probably do it justice in talking about it. But the presentation says it all. There's a multitude of moving parts in this at the moment, but I'll try and cover a few of them. But yeah, so Eddie's come in. He's got some really good experience in the Mexican and US oil and gas markets. He's built five companies that have had strong profitability and revenue growth, and then that have gone on to be sold to larger companies. So, you know, that in itself is a positive. For me, you know, the current market cap is around about 2.5 million, with a mid price of spot 0.185. You know, if you look back a year, this was trading at 10 times its current price. All right, you know, they've had several placings in the interim period. But arguably now the company is probably in the best position that it's been for further development. And there is a lot of work going on. There's a lot of short-term catalysts. There's workover drills going on at Schoetz Creek. And they're looking to tie up the gas there. The gas price has also gone up, because it was about $1.40 in February 2016. It's now about $3.20, and it's heading towards $4. So that's going to work in their favour as well. So we could see a massive increase in the potential revenue here in the relative short term as well. So that's, you know, that's one of the keys for me, was getting on board, was really what's the short term catalyst. Obviously, you know, they've had a history of discounted placings.
$14 billion,
which is you know, this is not the sort of thing I'd ever normally get involved in, but I just think that there are there's so many short term catalysts that the end size of the prize here is just so huge that the key is get the natural gas up and running, get the pipeline up and running, get the and on the wells to become cash neutral to cash positive, and then they can start working on some of the other projects that they have. And this is, again, I refer back to the presentation, because there's a lot going on. They're doing lots of things in Mexico. They've got a joint venture with Gaia Ecologica, a local oil field environmental services company that have got a strong track record. They plan to complete their first scalable environmental waste remediation facility to recycle oil cuttings at 700 tonnes per day. And that is on track to be fully commissioned by the end of 2016, quarter one 2017. There's a lot going on. As I say, I can't probably do it justice in this. So I just thoroughly recommend anybody to have a good read of the presentation.
Yeah, well, do you know what? And that's another lesson here, Dan. We're learning all along. Do you know what? And one of the first things, you know, I often do is go to a company's website and look at the most current presentation, because I think it gives you a nice, you know, overview, doesn't it? And always recommend that. What I like here is on their last statement at RNS interim results, they've got management. In September, Mayan appointed Mr. Heriberto Gonzalez, in brackets Eddie, as chief executive officer. Heriberto Gonzalez, Eddie. Just call me Eddie, yeah? I know, so many people have really mispronounced his name. Just call me Eddie, yeah? It's easier. So almost in that instance there, he's going for, you know, simplifying something, and I quite like that. So, yeah, I will check that out. And
I like the way that within the presentation as well, that they have put specific timelines on things, you know, things that they aim to complete between day one and day 30, and then within day 31 to 60, and then 60 to 61 to 90, and 91 to 120. So it's very well planned out.
Yeah,
and
do you know what
they need to do is deliver on this plan, and I can't believe that they would have put a plan as specific as that in place if they didn't believe that they were going to deliver on it.
No, exactly. And a person, someone only does that who has confidence in their abilities, because either you've got to be a very good liar or you're very good, because, you know, first and foremost, it gives shareholders, you know, a definite time frame. And if you can stick to that, then it gives confidence in the management completely, doesn't it? And, you know, to be honest, I had Randy on a couple of times, and I never really bought into Randy. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Just something about Randy I didn't get. But I like the fact that he do put time frames on that, because it's confidence in the management, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And hopefully you'll be able to get Eddie on there, and he'll be able to, again, articulate this to the PI market, you know, exactly what the plans are and how things are progressing with each of those. I mean, I'm expecting that we'll see some news on some of this in the very near future, just based on the plan included within the presentation. So
yeah,
there's a short-term catalyst there. It's been unloved for a long time. It's at a fraction of its share price of a year ago. I mean, this is exactly the sort of thing that has the potential to go up multiple times, in my view.
Marvellous. Mine is MYN, isn't it, ticker? Yeah, and
MYN, yeah. That's it.
Cool, Dan. Thanks very much. So, I'll go there or send it to me, and I'll put it on the blog there so people can read it, and also a link to the website. And you can read it all about Herbito Gonzalez, or Eddie, as he likes to be known. Thanks, Dan. Speak soon.
Brilliant. Cheers, Justin.
Okay, today's top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours are these. And by the way, if you have the app, which is free to download, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app, they download it, and you follow any of these companies, download the app, of course, it's free, just log in there, and you click on any of these companies and follow them, you'll get RNSs sent straight to the front screen of your phone when they release them, within seconds. So there's no reason why you shouldn't get it. It's an invaluable, priceless, free resource. Please get it. It's worth it, honestly. So, anyway, most followed, top five. Number five, Proxarma. At four, 88 Energy. At three, EVRH Holdings. At two, Erasure Mining. And at number one, I can't remember the last time it wasn't in the top five. Phenomenal momentum behind this stock. I've had the CEO on the podcast twice. It is, of course, the one, the only, CloudTag, CTAG. Goes on from strength to strength. All right, the most liked RNS on the Vox Markets website this morning is, I mentioned it with Tony, Asia Met Resources. Arse! Their drilling and production report there about BKM. And do you know what? I don't know if I mentioned this to Tony on the podcast or off the podcast, but I was doing some research on YOLO this weekend, and I was reading up on Nigel Ray, who's a very well-known investor, worth about $300 million, according to the Times Rich List. He's an investor in YOLO. And he says, you know what, whenever I have short-term punts or a broker friend of mine calls me up, I say, I don't generally do well. When I do well is when I invest in a good project with good management. And he said, good management and be patient. That's when my investments pay off. And I always think of that. I know I think of Tony Manini there. And, you know, like he says, he's done it all before. And you have to have some patience here with investments. You can't hope to buy one day and be up, you know, 100% the next day. It's hard. You know, I think do research, look at the management, look at the assets, you know, look at the cash, look at the shareholders, and then based on that information, you make an investment. Not chuck your full load in, don't chuck the farm and the ranch on it. You know, you make an initial investment and be prepared for a softening of the share price. But if it's a good company with good management and the story doesn't change, you know, you can buy more at a cheaper level if the share price goes down. That's the way to look at it. Any other, you know, product or anything, when the price goes down, it's a good thing. People snap it up. With shares, people get worried. But listen, you know, if the story hasn't changed, the management hasn't changed, it's all good in the hood, you know what I'm saying? So there we are. That's my bit of my two pence worth there. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition.
PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want with PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards so you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.